Arts Connection, the intersection of faith and the arts in Canadian culture, with your host, Robert White. Now, here's Robert.
Welcome to Arts Connection, and welcome to our final summer edition of Arts Connection, where we look at the intersection of faith, arts, and Canadian culture. Today, we'll listen to segments of interviews from the past year, and first up is singer-songwriter Kev Morse. But first, let's listen to In the Blood, the title track from Kev Morse's In the Blood CD.
Take me as I am, or don't take me at all. It's hard for you to understand every time you see me falling down. I'll wallow for a while, and when I come around, heart'll be out on my sleeve. Thought that you would know by now. If only you could see through my eyes for just one day. Look into my troubled mind and wonder why you made this way. Wanna run away from myself until I'm free, but I never will escape the shadows of my history. It's in my blood. Nothing you can do, there's nothing you can say to make me change my ways. So tap into my
veins. Now to the interview with Kev Morse. Now, it's been a couple of years since our last Arts Connection conversation, so maybe, especially since we have some new listeners in here, let's give them a little bit of background about you. When did you sort of develop an interest in music?
Well, early on, as a teenager, I was into music like most teens were. But in terms of actually becoming a musician, I was a bit of a late bloomer. I didn't really pick up a guitar until I was about 18, and then I discovered that I actually had a bit of ability and just developed it from there.
What made you pick up guitar in particular?
I had a few friends that were in bands at the time, one of which was the band that I ultimately ended up joining, which at the time was called Greytown. This would have been back in the mid-80s, and I had a couple of friends that sort of encouraged me to learn the instrument. So before I began singing and writing songs, I was strictly a guitar player. But it was some friends that said, hey, if you've got an ability there, maybe you should develop that. Mm-hmm. And we'll see where it leads in terms of joining bands.
Well, band. Looking at that, what were some of the influences that you had at that time?
I grew up in church community and church life like very early on. So there was always church music that was happening. Actually, I remember in our last conversation, I don't think I had mentioned this, I remember seeing Andre Crouch, actually, when I was quite young. I would have been maybe 12 or 13. I was attending People's Church in Toronto at the time. And I think that was my first real experience for like a full-blown concert at church, although there were many other Christian bands that kind of came through. But I remember being really blown away by that because the R&B that he was playing and writing at the time and the full ensemble that he had there when I saw that particular show was really pretty wild. But on the pop end of things, my eldest brother was in the record industry early on when I was a kid, so I was exposed to all kinds of music back then.
Was there anything you were really drawn to, even in the pop genre?
Yeah, oh, definitely. I'd say when I was quite young, like even as early as 8, 9 years old, because of my brother's extensive record collection, I was listening to the Beatles. I was listening to Pink Floyd. My folks weren't really jazzed about the idea of me listening to some of the heavier stuff. Yeah, rock. I definitely listened to a lot of rock at a young age, and then everything from that to the Beach Boys. I listened to Endless Summer over and over again. I think that's where I got a lot of my vocal sensibilities. And then moving on from that, there was a time there where I actually got into quite a bit of R&B, Earth, Wind, and Fire, some of the underground funk scene and things like that back in my junior high days. And then after I kind of went through that phase, I got back into rock and was listening to The Police and Rush and bands like that.
Well, you were saying earlier that picking up the guitar, you got involved in bands and things like that. What led you to pursuing music, even as a part-time career? What kind of got you to the point where you're actually looking at doing that on a regular basis?
Going back to probably the late 80s, once I had joined Greytown, the band that I was in with my friends, we were sort of on a bit of a curve leading towards something that could have potentially turned into something more full-time. We actually, it culminated back in the early 90s, where we actually had a video on Much Music that ran on the Indie Street show that Much Music had going on at the time. And we won third place in Q107 Homegrown and had a little spot on Breakfast Television. And it was sort of at that point where I realized, we've actually got some possibilities here. The lead singer and other primary songwriter, Jeff, he and I co-wrote tunes together. And that's when I really realized that to write a good song, something that would stand on its own, that there's some possibilities of doing that beyond sort of a full rock band type of arrangement. So once our band disbanded in the early 90s, I continued to write, and Jeff and I continued to write together, just to sort of build our body of work. But then I started writing on my own, and I also became the worship leader at my church here in Milton and wrote a couple of worship tunes and that were brought into the rotation at church. And I just more and more I realized that as an instrumentalist and as a writer and composer, that there's other avenues that you can take. You don't have to be in a fully realized band in order to pursue other things as a writer and as a player. So I found a lot of different avenues to pursue that on a part-time basis all through the 90s and up until today.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we return to this special summer edition of Arts Connection, we're going to listen to an interview with visual artist James Tugan. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM.
So many wonders rise. coming each day to set us free. Coming to loose our chains, join us with all the saints who can see their inheritance coming through. As the dancing faints to you, and as we dance our thanks, your joy will be our strength, and your love will be the wine that makes our spirit shine. With the holy light that's burning a hole in the night, as we make your presence known. Dancing thanks and praise before your throne. Your love will be the wine that makes our spirit shine. Our thanks, your joy will be our strength.
Welcome back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to Dancing Thanks from Peter Tichlar's Gracious Window CD. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to listen to an interview with visual artist and poet James Tugan. Now, before we talk about the Access exhibit, let's give our listeners a chance to get to know you a bit. I think it's been a couple of years since we've talked on this program, so there could be some new people out there. You've been creating art for quite a while now. How did you get started?
I've been a visual artist since I've been a child, I guess. I've been working professionally for about 40 years in the fine art world, as an illustrator with magazines all over North America. And for the last 10 or 12 years, I've been teaching.
Well, looking at that, I mean, you've done a lot of things. You do visual arts, you paint, you do photography, you also write poetry. Is there any one art form that you are drawn to more so than any of the others?
Well, you suggested that I'm a painter. Well, actually, I draw. My drawings look like paintings, but they're high realist drawings with chalk pastel, and that's probably what is my first commitment. My interest in poetry is really recent, and it grew out of the experience of some tragedy in my family with the loss of my son, and who died way too early. The experience of that led to wanting the need to write and to try to work through that. It became a kind of a therapeutic experience for me.
Well, when you look at some of the things that you've drawn and that, and what sort of inspires you in the type of works that you do?
My drawings look like realistic depictions of surfaces from Northern Ontario, or if you look at the Dreaming of Lions project, which some people out there may have seen, it's kind of an aerial view of a completely imaginary landscape in China. I tend to look at the world a little bit like a cartographer. I love maps, and that comes out of my experience canoeing and sailing. But I tend to be one of those people who likes to see how everything's connected. So my drawing tends to reflect an interest in surfaces and the metaphor and patterns. It tends to be really interested in surface and the play of light on surface. So that is what has driven most of my drawing all these years.
Well, and you mentioned too that you've done educating in that as well, and I think is neat in terms of being able to help sort of the next generations of artists that are coming up. What sort of led to you getting involved in teaching?
Well, it happened. Because, I mean, when I started in fine art and I migrated into the world of doing fine art in the illustrative world, in the communication arts, I decided to leave that to do the Dreaming of Lions project, which was a 4.5-year project. And when that was over, I came back, and the illustration market, 80% of it vaporized literally in 1 year because of a certain industry condition where people were not buying original art, but were buying already previously created work that had been stored up in Image Bank and master file. And so at that moment, the work that I did, which is very time-consuming, didn't have a ready market. And I was invited by an artistic friend, Matt Cubito and Justin Cooper from Redeemer, to come and teach. And I got a baptism of fire in learning to become an educator. And I've discovered that I loved it. I had taught when I was younger in canoeing and swimming, but was kind of brought back to it by circumstances in life. And once I got into it, I found that the process of encouraging young artists to discover their language and to take care of it was nothing less than exhilarating.
Well, looking at that, and as you say, you know, encouraging young artists to find their way, what sort of motivates you as a teacher to help these students find that way? Like, how do you help them find the way that they will eventually either discover that this is the calling, this is the path that they want to go on, or that this is something that they're going to do, but they may go in another direction in terms of vocation?
Well, that's actually an interesting question, because the major challenge, I think, of art educators today, and particularly Christian art educators, is persuading people who have real talent and who each think very differently visually, and they see differently, and they work differently, persuading them to believe that you can have a career that actually is survivable as an artist, and that there are many more careers than what people are aware of. You can actually make a living. There's an awful lot of pressures within our own community of faith to discourage that, and I think our job is to help people discover what their voice is, how God has designed them to see and to work in many different styles. I like to refer to them as different languages, and help them find an emotional fit with certain careers. Like, if you're going to be a graphic designer, you have a different way of thinking than if you're a fine artist, or if you're an art therapist, or an architect. I mean, there's at least 20 different careers where you can actually make a decent living in this country, the poorest of which, of course, is being a gallery fine artist. But the rest of them are all making a living. And a lot of people in school don't know much about it. And a lot of parents are kind of in the dark, and they discourage their kids sometimes because they think it's just the no-go in terms of being able to support a family and so on. And that's really not true. There's a lot of avenues open to young people, and I think our job is to help them find out who they are and get prepared for that.
After this final break, the summer edition of Arts Connection will return with an interview with poet Margot Swiss. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM. Welcome back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to Flying Low from the Honeycomb Tomb CD by Carla Adolph. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to wrap up this summer edition of Arts Connection with an interview with poet Margot Swiss. Now, let's get our listeners to know a little bit more about you and know you a little better. When did you start writing?
I started writing, as most writers do, as a child, but I didn't get very far with that. Kids have lots of other things to do, as you know. So I really become engaged with writing poetry at about the age of 18. And I had a wonderful high school teacher, my grade 13 class, and we did, in class, we did the Romantics, we did Wordsworth and Keats, and of course those so appeal to a young reader. And then that teacher, Mrs. Marion Heidemann was her name, and she had in the second term what she called poetry seminars. And those were extracurricular activities, and we had those after class on Mondays. And each Monday, we would, a few of us, just a few of us, would have a little seminar, and we'd look at writers that we couldn't look at in class, like the metaphysicals. We looked at John Donne's work, George Herbert, Henry Vaughan, a little bit of Eliot, lyric poems by Eliot. Just really interesting. And that process, really, that year, really gave me a new way of being happy, really. That's how I would describe it when I was engaging with those poems.
Well, what was it about poetry at that level? I mean, I recall being a teen, and I'm not sure if there's a gender element in here or not. But, you know, although I do love poetry, but poetry and English and literature and things like that weren't really attractive to high school students. What was it about this that really caught your imagination?
I think it certainly was the personal mentorship that she gave us as readers. And so capable as she was very well schooled in poetry and loved it herself and conveyed that to us. And of course, we know how a teacher can do that. And also, we explicated the poems. We learned to sort of what we call now in the business peel poems, and we really looked at them and how remarkably they work together in their components. And that fascinated me. And in particular, it was the metaphor that really engaged me, and it still does. And so that really... Why poetry? Why is that my genre? It's because with poems, one can really work closely with a metaphor and, you know, really construct a body of work that is has real resonance and lots of connotative associations.
Well, how did all of this, the things you were learning in school, how did that all lead to you becoming published as a poet?
Well, when I got into university, I continued the writing, and as I say, from 18 on, I wrote as much as I had time to. And in university, of course, I was exposed to new writers and in a new environment. It was very exciting, I wrote in a different vein. I read more widely than the sort of 17th century, which continued to be my academic field, and I have real interest in that. But I read, you know, contemporary material and so on, and I started to style myself in a more contemporary voice than it had been. I think when kids first start writing, they write almost like a formal Victorian, you know, you're kind of stilted and that sort of thing, and you're writing from the models that you read, and then that time it was historical. So I was reading more contemporary writers, and I started writing my work in a slightly different voice and new way, and I sent them out as an undergraduate, and I managed to get them published in little journals that were around the area. I got in Quarry, which was, you know, a little magazine that came out of Queens. I think it still does. And Canadian Forum was going at that time, and Fiddlehead on the East Coast. So I was fortunate enough as an undergraduate by about my third and fourth year to be able to be publishing a few poems here and there. And that really encouraged me that, you know, editors were willing to take a few poems and publish them. So it really, you know, it took off. I also had a mentor in about my third year, and in my fourth year, who read my poetry very, very closely. He was a teacher I had, Michael Sidnall. He's retired now from U of T. And he worked with me very closely for at least a year on the poetry to, you know, work with it and improve it, and he was critical of it, and he was extremely helpful in that process. And so then I started publishing in journals, and there.
It took off from there. Well, you mentioned earlier that you especially academically, you're still involved in some of the earlier poets, people like John Milton and John Donne, and you mentioned that your latest collection, Hatching of the Heart, has been influenced by George Herbert.
Yes.
What attracts you to a particular poet? What sort of grabs your attention with a poet or an author?
Well, I loved Herbert. As I say, starting with Mrs. Heideman years back, it was the metaphysicals that really interested me because of their use of metaphors and conceits. Just grabbed me. That's all I can say. But another thing that really interested me that connected with that period, and it has been applied in modern, it has modern application, is the concept of the Christian writer's sense of his own or her own work as a kind of liturgy and a kind of offering, a work done for God and community, so which is the basic definition of liturgy. So certainly Herbert was a priest, and as was Donne, and then Milton as well took preparation to be a minister. He didn't take orders in the end, but these writers all saw their work as Christian writers as a kind of liturgy. And some of them, as I say, literally were priests, so you could see the connection. And that has been taken to the modern as well. I mean, some people, Auden has talked about that, and to some degree others too, in a more modern context. So that is certainly something that I see my work, as a kind of liturgy for God and community.
Thank you for listening to the special summer edition of Arts Connection today. And if you miss a broadcast or want to hear it again, look for archive programs on our website at artsconnection.ca. And be sure to tune in next week for another look where faith, arts, and Canadian culture meet. For more information on Arts Connection, a production of Say Love Ministries, email robert@artsconnection.ca. Follow us on Twitter at @SayLaw13. Look for the Arts Connection page on Facebook, or check out the Arts Connection blog at blog.artsconnection.ca. For Arts Connection, I'm your host, Robert White, saying good day and God bless.